Okay, so we're currently going through kashrut issues related to plants, things that grow from the ground. And the last 2 weeks, we learned about the issues of trumot and masrot, and a little bit also about the law of orla. And these were laws that, trumot and masrot apply only in Eretz Yisrael. Orla, we learned, applies in Chutz La'aretz also, but for various reasons, it's of much less practical concern in Chutz La'aretz than it is here. Today, we're going to be learning about a different halacha, which also has to do with things that grow, with grains, and that's the law of Chadash. If anyone didn't get a sheet, they're here. I'll leave them on this table here. Okay, there you go. Okay, you will understand it, Bezrat Hashem, in the next 45 minutes, okay? I will explain, okay? Did you not get it? Oh, okay.
I get it out.
Did you get it out? Okay. The same. Okay. This particular topic, I think, is very interesting for a few reasons. First of all, here also you'll see that there's a difference both halachically and practically between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz, but it's the opposite. This is something that's almost of no problem at all, practically speaking. The law applies in Eretz Yisrael, but it's of almost no practical concern here in Israel, and it's of major concern dafke in Chutz La'aretz. So it's kind of the reverse of what we did last week on that level. It's interesting also because this is a law that has a little bit of a connection to the world of korbanot. Nowadays, unfortunately, we can't bring korbanot, and we really have the whole concept of korbanot in the Beit HaMikdash, sadly, is something that's very foreign to us. We had here before Yom Kippur, some of us learned the Mishnayot about Yom Kippur, and we talked a little bit about how foreign this is to us. This is one halakha that's indirectly, the source sheet's right there on the table there. Sarita's one for you too there. This is one halakha that is connected indirectly, and not even so indirectly, it's connected to the laws of Korbanot, but it's still relevant, Bizman Hazeh. So it gives us some degree, a little bit, of connection to the laws of Korbanot. And also, it's a fascinating example. Some of you were in the class I just taught in Makshevet Yisrael about Chumrah. It's a fascinating example of what poskei halakha have to do when we're confronted with a situation, which we're going to see is the situation, where you have a situation where the overwhelming majority of the Jewish people are doing something which seems to be an Isser De'oraisa, and it's almost impossible to avoid doing it. And what are we going to do about that? Because the Torah says it's Asur, it seems, and we can't live by this law, it seems. What do we do about that? Chadash is a fascinating example of that. Corinne, you wanted to say something?
Oh, I was going to ask if I'm crazy or not, but is this printed like lopsided?
So first of all, you probably are crazy, in general, but yes, the sheet is actually a little bit lopsided. Okay, but as long as we know where we stand, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with the psukim in the Torah. Okay, these psukim you may recognize from Parshat Emor. These are the psukim. This is what's called the Parshat HaMo'adot. And it starts with Pesach. Actually starts with Shabbat. I didn't give those psukim. And then, Eile Mo'adei Hashem Mikra'i Kodesh Asher Tikuru Otam V'Mo'ada. בחודש הראשון ב-14 לחודש בין 40 פסח לשם וב-15 יום לחודש הזה חג המצות לשם שבעת ימים מצות תאכלו ביום הראשון מקרא קודש יהיה לכם כל מלאכת עבודה לא תעשו. Okay, the holiday of Pesach, or what the Torah calls Chag HaMatzot, is how long? How long is it?
7 days.
7 days. And during these 7 days you eat matzot, and the first of those 7 days is a chag. And then the Torah tells us something that we're less familiar with. V'ikravtem ishe l'ashem shivat yamim v'yom ha-shvi'i mikra kodesh kom lechat avodah lo tasu. Fine, you have to bring a korban every day. And then v'yidaber Hashem Moshe l'imur. Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'marta lehem ki tavo el ha'aretz asher ani noten lachem u'kitzartem et kitzira v'aveitem et omer reishit kitzirchem el ha-kohen v'enif et ha-omer lefnei Hashem l'irtzonchem mimocharat ha-shabbat yenifenu ha-kohen. V'asitem b'yom ha-nifchem et ha-omer Keves tamim ben shnato leolah l'Hashem u'minchato shnei etzronim zolet u'lav Hashem and ishel Hashem reach nichoach v'nisko yayin revi'i tahin. This is what's called the Korban Omer. On the second day of Pesach, right? Pesach begins. It's actually called in the Torah Chag HaMatzot, but we call it Pesach. And on Chag HaMatzot, which begins on the 15th day of Nisan, is a Chag. And then on the 16th day, the day which is Yom Tov Sheni in Chutz La'aretz, but the day which is really the first day of Chol HaMoed, there's a special korban brought called the Korban HaOmer. Right? Ve'heveitim et Omer reshit kitzirchem, the first of your harvest. Okay, let me, I guess this is the right time to explain the following fact that you need to know to understand this halacha. The agricultural cycle here in Eretz Yisrael is the following. As you have begun to realize, I'm sure, it doesn't rain here at all in the summertime. It only rains in the wintertime. Right? You landed here in August and you've been here 2 months and it's barely rained at all. And only last week or so, it was last week or the week before, we started asking for rain because it doesn't rain in the summer. And therefore, crops don't grow in the summer either. So the way the agricultural cycle works, and the Shalosh Regalim are built around this cycle. Here, you'll have it here. So the Shalosh Regalim are built around this cycle. What happens is that the crops grow only in the winter during the rains. So the farmer goes out after Sukkot, sometime around this time of year now, before the rains, and he plows his field and he plants seeds. Okay, and he prays for rain. And with the help of Hashem, hopefully, it rains. And it rains all winter. And the seeds begin to grow in the springtime. Pesach is Chag HaAviv. And the word Aviv literally refers to the ripening of the wheat. The ripening of the grain. Okay? And therefore, on Pesach, we bring the Korban HaOmer, which is Reshit Kitzirchem. It's brought from Se'orim. Se'orim ripened before Chita. And the very first thing that's brought, they go out to the fields and they find a little bit of barley that's ripe. Most of the crops are not ready yet. And they bring what's called the Korban Omer, Reshit Kitzirchem, the very first of the Katzir, very first of the harvest. That's the Korban Omer. And then we get the Pasuk, and together with the Omer, there's an animal brought, etc. That's the Korban Omer, special Korban that's brought on the 16th of Nisan, the first day of Chol HaMoed Pesach. And then the Torah gives us the following law in Pasuk Lamed Yudalad. V'lechem v'kali v'charmeh lo tochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh ad habiyachem et korban elokechem chukat olam l'dorotechem b'chol moshvotechem. What that means is v'lechem v'kali v'charmeh. Lechem we know means bread. Kali and karmel are things that can be made from the grain itself. Like if you eat roasted kernels of wheat or of barley, that's called kali. Karmel is when you crush it and eat it. So you cannot eat anything made from the grain, be it bread that's made from flour, be it eating the grain itself in any way. Ad etzem hayom hazeh, until this very day. Which day? The day that the Korban Omer is brought. Ad aviyachem et korban alochichem. Chukat olam l'dorotechem. Bechol moshvotechem, says the Torah. That's an important phrase we'll see in a minute. And then it says, Usfartem lachem, mimocharat shabbat, miyom aviyachem et omer tnufa, sheva shabbatot, mimot tiyena, ad mimocharat shabbat ashvi, tisperu chamishim yom, vikravtem mincha chadashal Hashem. Sfirata omer is called Sfirata omer because you're counting from the day that you bring the Korban Omer, 50 days, and then you bring Mincha Chadasha. There's another special Korban brought on Chag HaShavuot, which is called the Korban Shtei HaLechem. That's what that's referring to, and I won't go into that now because it's not relevant to this. What's relevant to us is the prohibition. The Lechem, the Kali, the Karmel, lo tochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh. And what that means, lahalacha, is that the crops that grow that year, what's called Chadash, most of the crops anyway aren't ready to be harvested yet. But the crops that are ready to anything that, let's say you manage to harvest some crop, some grain, before the Korban Omer is brought, the lechem, the kali, the karmel, lo tochlu, ad etzem hayom hazeh, ad haviyachem et korban elokechem. Until the day when the Korban Omer is brought. Then it becomes permissible to eat that year's crops. The idea being that before we eat anything for ourselves, we first have to bring a korban to Hashem. Just 1 second. Okay? So that's where the terms chadash and yashan come from. The grains that grow in a given year are chadash, and they are prohibited to be brought until the day the Korban Omer is brought. When the Korban Omer is brought, all of the chadash, all of the new wheat, is now considered yashan. It's considered old wheat or old grains, and it is now permissible to use that year's crops. That's what this pasuk says. How does this apply in practical terms? So in source number 2, you have a Mishnah, Masechet Manachot, that tells us that the Mishef Karev HaOmer Hutar Chadash Miyad, the actual moment that the Korban Omer is brought, that is the moment when Chadash becomes permissible, becomes Yashan, okay? It can be brought. So if you're sitting in Yerushalayim and you have a sandwich, made on matzot, of course, because this is Pesach, right? And it's made from the Chadash, and you watch them bring the Korban, the sandwich is Asur until the second they bring the Korban, and then you can eat the sandwich. That's if you're in Yerushalayim. HaRechokim, and if you're not in Yerushalayim, so you have, in those days, right, today we'll just log on to the internet, and there'll be live broadcasts, they'll tell us exactly when they brought the Omer. In those days, they didn't have that, so you have to just assume, HaRechokim mutarim mechatzot hayom ulehalan. From people far away, they have to wait until chatzot hayom, because we can assume that by then, that's when the korban will have been brought.
It was only brought on Pesach.
What was that?
It was only brought on Pesach.
The korban omer was brought on the second day of Pesach. Okay. And then the Mishnah tells us that Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai hitkim sheyom haneif kulo asur. What happens to Bizman Hazeh when there is no korban? When the Beit HaMikdash exists, the chadash becomes permissible at the moment that they bring the korban. If you're in Yerushalayim and you know exactly when they bring the korban, then you can eat the chadash at that very moment. If you're not in Yerushalayim, so then you can assume that by Chatzot Hayom that they brought the korban, and therefore from the second half and from the afternoon, you're sitting in your house in Beit Shemesh, and you don't know what's going on in Yerushalayim, so you can't eat the korban. You can't eat chadash in the morning because maybe they didn't bring the korban yet. But by chatzot, by the middle of the day, you can assume by now they for sure brought the korban and you can do it. What about bizman hazeh, when there is no korban to be brought? So it says there in the Mishnah, mishecharav beit hamikdash hitkin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai sheyehe yom haneif kulo asur. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, whose name we mentioned in this room last class also, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai made a ruling that Bizman Hazeh, you have to wait the entire day is Asur. Yom Haneif, the 16th of Nisan, the entire day is Asur. So Bizman Hazeh, Chadash becomes permissible only at night of the 16th of Nisan. And there's a machloket in the Mishnah why that is. Rabbi Yehuda says that this is the din min HaTorah, but the Tanakhama doesn't think that way, and other opinions also in the Gemara discuss it, and the majority opinion is that Bizman Hazeh, really Chadash becomes permissible as soon as the sun comes up on the 16th of Nisan. In other words, when there is a korban to be brought, then it's the actual korban that permits the eating of the Chadash. When there is no korban, in theory, the moment the sun comes up, and it's the day of the korban, because it says in the pasuk, Ad etzim hayom hazeh, ad haviyachem, at korban alokeichem. So the way the Gemara, according to majority opinion, understands that pasuk, when there is a korban, it's the korban itself that permits it. When there is no korban, it's etzem hayom hazeh that permits it. And therefore, in theory, first thing in the morning, you could eat chadash. But because of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's takana, we have to wait until the night time. That's how we'll see in a second in the Shulchan Aruch how we paskin. Okay, but that's the bottom line. So the halacha is the following, and you see from this that this halacha applies not only when there is a Beit HaMikdash, but even when there isn't. That the chadash, the wheat that grows, or the grains that grow in a given year, are prohibited until basically the 17th of Nisan, which is the night after the 16th. I mean, Torah that permitted in the morning of the 16th, but either Rabbanan, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, we have to wait until the end of the day, until the 17th of Nisan at night. That's when we can eat. Then the chadash becomes yashan, and it becomes permissible. Okay. So now we understand what the law of Chadash is. Now here's the question. Does this apply only in Eretz Yisrael or even in Chutz La'aretz? The Mishnah in Masechet Kiddushin, source number 3, tells us, Kol mitzvah shehi tluya ba'aretz, eina noheget ela ba'aretz. V'she'ina tluya ba'aretz, noheget bein ba'aretz, bein b'chutz la'aretz. Chutz min ha'orla v'kilayim. Rabbi Eliezer omer af ha'chadash. We have a concept of mitzvot ha'tzluyot ba'aretz, and the Gemara, skip to the last line of the Gemara. The Gemara explains it. Kol mitzvah yishol chovat haguf. noheget bein baretz bein mechutz laretz. Chovat karka ein noheget el baretz. Okay, so we're talking about chovat haguf, right? I have to put on tefillin. It's my own, my, I have to go on my body, right? So that applies whether I'm in Yerushalayim or whether I'm in New York or in anywhere else. But chovat karka, right? We talked about trumot u'masrot, comes from the land. So most of the laws that come that are dependent on the land only apply in the land, capital L, in Eretz Yisrael. But there are a few exceptions. Orla, we talked about last week. Orla applies in Chutz La'aretz too. It's a special halacha l'Moshe Sinai, even though it would seem from the pasuk that it doesn't. Kil'ayim, which we're not going to talk about, the prohibition of planting different types of plants very close to each other, is also prohibited in Chutz La'aretz. And Rabbi Eliezer says Chadash as well. The Tanakama of this Mishnah, the first opinion of the Mishnah, does not say that. So we have Machloket Tanaim. And the Mefarshim explain that the Korban, the Machloket, is based on the last word in that Pasuk. What did the Pasuk say? Chukat Olam L'Dorotechem B'chol Moshvotechem. So Rabbi Eliezer reads that and says, this law applies in all generations, whether there's a Beit HaMikdash where they actually bring the Korban, or whether there isn't. And it applies b'chol moshvotechem, it doesn't matter where you live. The Tanakhama doesn't read it that way. He reads it b'chol moshvotechem differently. There's a discussion how he reads that, I won't go into it now. But the bottom line is this. There's a machloket tanaim. According to the Tanakhama, you know what the phrase Tanakhama means, right? You know, I've had that, this is the third time today I'm explaining this, and Gula's been in all three classes. The phrase Tanakhama means the anonymous first opinion. When you have very common, you have it. This is the third Mishnah today I've seen that works this way. Where you have an opinion that has no name associated with it, followed by a second opinion which has a name. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Afa Chadash. So we call the first opinion by the term Tana Kama. Kama means Rishon. It means first in Aramaic. So the phrase Tana Kama means the anonymous first opinion in the Mishnah.
Which source is
this? I'm on source number 3.
So
the Tanakhama of the Mishnah says, all mitzvot hatzluyot ba'aretz only apply in Eretz Yisrael, except for Orlin Kilayim. So according to the Tanakhama, Chadash is one of those laws that the mitzvah, just like Trumot and Masrot don't apply in Chutz La'aretz, just like Shemitah doesn't apply in Chutz La'aretz, Leket Shikha and Peya don't apply in Chutz La'aretz. So also this, also Chadash, according to Tanakhama, doesn't apply in Chutz La'aretz. But according to Rabbi Eliezer, Chadash is in the same category as Orlen Kilayim. It's an exception to the rule. It's a mitzvah hatluya ba'aretz that applies even in Chutz La'aretz. So this is a machloket tana'im. Yes?
Do you call it mitzvah chadash or do you call it kamah chadash?
Like, what I don't know what you mean.
What's the mitzvah called?
Chadash is the... Well, look at the next Mishnah. The Mishnah in Orla says, Hechadash asur min haTorah b'chol makom. So whereas the Mishnah in Kiddushin gave us two opinions, and the Mishnah refers to it as Chadash, Mishnah in Orla, Masechet Orla, tells us that Chadash is Asur min haTorah b'chol makom. Sounds like the Mishnah in Orla rules according to which opinion in Kiddushin? Rabbi Eliezer or the Tanakhama?
Rabbi Eliezer.
And not only that, he says it's an Issur d'Oraita. So the Mishnah in Orla seems to side with Rabbi Eliezer. What do we do lahalacha? We'll see in a minute. But before you get to the halacha, there's also a third possibility. And this is based on a Gemara Menachot that I didn't give you inside. But according to one of the opinions in the Gemara Menachot, that Samach Chet Amabet, Orla is Aser, I'm sorry, Chadash is Aser B'chutz La'aretz, Midrabanan. So there's actually three possibilities. One possibility is Rabbi Eliezer, who says that the pasuk b'chol moshvotechem applies in Chutz La'aretz, and therefore it means that the Isser of Chadash applies everywhere in the world. B'chol makom u'v'chol zman. The second possibility is the position mentioned in the Gemara Menachot, which would say that, in theory, the Tanakhama is correct, that really Chadash applies only in Eretz Yisrael. But it is also in Chutz La'aretz midrabanan. In other words, the rabbis extended it to Chutz La'aretz as well. That's the second possibility. And the third possibility is the first opinion of the Mishnah in Kiddushin, which says that Chadash is one of those mitzvot tluyot ba'aretz that applies only in Eretz Yisrael. That Chadash applies only in Eretz Yisrael. The Isser Chadash applies only in Eretz Yisrael. Now.
Wait.
Yeah?
I only have two opinions. Chadash is Darbanan, or it's only applied in Eretz Yisrael. It's the third one.
The first one I mentioned is that Chadash, it can be Asr in Chutz Laretz Midaraisa, that's what Rabbi Eliezer says. It could be Mutter Min HaTorah, but Asr Darbanan in Chutz Laretz. Or it could be just completely mutter in Chutz Laretz. Okay, so this is Machloket Tanaim. That's not so weird. That happens. What's weird is what happens next. Okay, the Rishonim, I gave you the Rambam, I won't read it inside, but let's skip down to the last source on the page, which is the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, the Rambam has his opinion, Tosfos says his, the Rif, the Rush. Let's look at the bottom line, Pesach in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Halacha Aleph. Seif Aleph. Asur lechol chadash mituat chamesh taminim ad shikrav haomer shehu betet zayin benisan shenemar velechem velechali vecharmel lo tochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh. The haidna means nowadays, the leka omer, when we don't have a korban omer, asur kol yom tet zayin. Exactly like the Mishnah said. Uvechutz la'art shosim shnei yamim asur kol yom yud zayin ad chilat leil yud chet. The Shulchan Aruch adds an additional point that Bizman Hazeh, when there is no Korban Omer, so you have to wait until the end of the day, till the 17th of Nisan. And in Chutz La'aretz, we have Yom Tov Sheni, right? And the whole concept of Yom Tov Sheni is that we treated it, we talked about this, as if it's a Safek, right? So on the 15th of Nisan is the first day of Pesach. On the 16th of Nisan is the second day of Pesach, but we're also observing it as Yom Tov in Chutz La'aretz because maybe it's really the first day, right? Okay, but that means that the next day, the 17th, which is when Chadash is really Mutter, but if yesterday was Yom Tov, then today is only the 16th. So since in Chutz La'aretz you're doing everything with this double day thing, you have to wait till the 18th. Okay? So that's what the Shulchan Aruch says. He says that Chadash, when there's a Beit HaMikdash, becomes Mutter when they bring the Korban Omer on the 16th of Nisan. And when there is no Korban Omer, so you have to wait until the 17th of Nisan in Eretz Yisrael. And in Chutz La'aretz, you therefore have to wait until the 18th of Nisan.
So the end of the day?
To the end of the 17th, which means the 18th. So first of all, how does the Shulchan Aruch paskin? Does Chadash apply in Chutz La'aretz or not?
Yes.
Midaraisa or Midarabanan?
Doesn't say.
Unclear. Okay? He certainly paskins that Chadash applies in Chutz La'aretz. Is it because he holds like Rabbi Eliezer that it's Min HaTorah? Or is he following the opinion that's mentioned in Menachot that maybe it's Darabanan? That's not 100% clear. The majority that we've shown him, though, I skipped with you the Rambam. If you go back in source number 5 and look at the Rambam, I won't do it inside, but you can see the Rambam, for example, clearly says that it's Asur Min HaTorah, like Rabbi Eliezer, but the Shulchan Aruch himself doesn't say. But in any case, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that there is a Isur Chadash in Chutz La'aretz, and he tells you that even more clearly in Halacha Bet, Isur HaChadash Noheg Bein Ba'aretz, Bein B'Chutz La'aretz, Bein B'Shel Yisrael, Bein b'shel oved kochavim. It makes no difference whether the farmer who owns the land where the crops grow is a Jew or a goy. One might have thought that maybe this law only applies if the land is owned by a Jew. But that's not the case, says the Shulchan Aruch. Even if the land is owned by a goy, and even if it's chutz la'aretz, and even bizman hazeh, this law applies. And in Seif Gimel, he tells us, how do you know what's chadash and what's yashan? Tvu'ah shelo hishrisha. What do you think the word hishrisha means? It's from the word shoresh. What's a shoresh? The root. So grain that hasn't taken root. Kodem utet zayin benisan, asura ad sheyavoh haomer haba. So that's the rule. Shulchan Aruch rules as follows. Any grains that take root. Let's put it this way. You harvest a stalk of wheat, or barley, or oats, or spelt, or rye. Chamesha b'nei dagan. Okay? That stalk of wheat, from the minute it takes root, is chadash, until the coming 16th or 17th of Nisan. Okay, so if this thing took root, if you planted the wheat on the 10th of Nisan, and it took root already, then, by the time you harvest it, it's already yashan, even though it You just, the day you harvest it, you can already eat it because it's been growing for a couple of months and it's already yashan. But if you only planted it after Pesach, then it becomes, it remains until the next Pesach. It's chadash and then it becomes yashan. And this is where the problems begin. See, in Eretz Yisrael, this halacha does not present that much of a practical difficulty. First of all, in contemporary Medinat Yisrael, almost all the grain we get here is imported from Chutz La'aretz, mainly from America, and by the time it gets here, it's yashan. Okay? They store it for a long time, and by the time it hits the market, it's yashan. Almost all the grains that you buy here, or products made from grains, even if you buy fresh bread, you go into Anjo and you bake bread that was baked this morning, the bread was baked this morning. But the flour that it was baked from was grown probably in the United States, and many, many, many months ago, flour can be stored for a long time. So that's not a problem. Just hold on a second. Okay, but even if we did grow things locally, I already explained to you how the agricultural cycle works here. Okay, you can't grow grains in the summer. You only grow grains in the winter. They're planted after Sukkot. And most of them are barely ready to be harvested. Most of them are only ready to be harvested after Pesach. Even if there is something that you might be able to harvest a little bit before Pesach, maximum you have to wait a week or two to use it, it's not a big deal. It wouldn't hit the market anyway probably until after Pesach. And if we had to wait, we'd wait. It's not such a problem. However, once you rule that this halacha applies all over the world, so there are many parts of the, forget even the southern hemisphere. Forget like going down to Australia where everything's upside down and the winter's the summer and the summer's the winter. But even in many parts of Europe and in the United States, there are summer crops. So let's talk about the United States. In the United States, there is a winter crop and a summer crop. Of course they are. Wheat. And barley. And oats. All of them. They plant in the winter and they plant again in the summer. So the winter crop is not a problem. They planted August, September, October. They harvested in the spring. By the time it hits the market, it's after Pesach. The wheat took root. So for example, now, somewhere in Ohio, some farmer Joe is seeding his field, right? It's going to take root now. It's chadash now. But it's okay because we can't eat it now. By the time farmer Joe is going to harvest it, it's going to be March, April, whatever it is. By the time it winds up in a box of Cheerios that hits your supermarket shelf, it's going to be after Pesach. So it's chadash now. By the time it hits your supermarket shelf, it'll be yashan. But Farmer Bob, maybe Farmer Joe himself, if not Farmer Bob, who lives down the road from Farmer Joe, he's going to plant summer wheat. He's going to plant summer wheat. And particularly in a year when Pesach is early, such as this year, his summer wheat may only take root after Pesach. Okay, Pesach this year is in March, isn't it? I think it is. Okay, so let's say on April 15th of this year, after filing his tax return, Farmer Bob goes out and plants wheat. That wheat is chadash. And that wheat is going to take several months to grow. He plants it in April, and he's going to harvest it in September or October. And it's going to hit the supermarket shelf maybe in November. Now. But it's chadash until next Pesach. Which means that according to this, for example, in the United States, many, many, many of the, anything that has flour of any type in it from the Chamesha Minyan Dagan, I'm not talking about rice and corn. Rice and corn are fine. But wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. From around this time of year, October, November time, all the way until Pesach, many of the products will have chadash in them. And things that can be stored for longer, like beer, for example, or whiskey, which are made from grains, okay, and they can sit for years. Okay, so you get a can of beer, or now my father buys scotch that's aged for, he sends me every time I go to the Chutz La'aretz, he asks me to go to the duty-free shop, and I don't drink this stuff. Beer I drink, scotch I don't even know the difference, but I go there and he drinks this like Glenfiddich in the Highland Park, I don't know what it is, and I buy this thing and it says, you know, aged 30 years, aged 50 years, you know, I'm like, that thing was put in a bottle before I was born. Okay, and that's why he charged $100 for it. But go figure out the wheat. Oh, no, actually, that's not a problem. Because right now, what was I just saying? What I just said made no sense.
That is
that's not chadash. Forget it. What I just said made absolutely no sense. Forget what I just said. But, right, forget what I just said. But, right, but things that are made from, I was confusing with a different halacha. Right, what I just said made no sense. But the chadash, but I told you a good story anyway. But the Chadash, but anything from the months of, you know, when the summer crop is available, through Pesach, is a real problem. And not only that, in the United States, there's two crops, but there are certain places in Europe, according to what I read in the Aruch HaShulchan, in Russia, where the Aruch HaShulchan is written, they only had, it's so cold there, I guess, in the winter, that there is no winter crop. There's only summer crop. They only are able to plant in the summer. And therefore, and particularly in earlier generations where you couldn't easily import things, it means that for several months, 6-7 months out of the year, there'll be nothing to eat. Because all the bread is Chadash. They plant in the spring, after Pesach. It takes root after Pesach. You harvest it, right? And this halacha, the Torah was given in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, this is fine. Because the whole point of it is that the wheat grows, the barley grows, and it's barely ready to be eaten. Before you touch it, bring the korban to Hashem. V'lechem v'kali v'kameh lo tachlu ad etzem ayom hazeh, ad aviyachem et omer korban alokechem. But you live in a place in the world where the climate is different, and the months are different, the agricultural cycle is different, and you have to follow this halacha. Because the Torah said, b'chol moshvoteichem, so then we're in a very, very, very difficult situation, and what are we going to do?
Read it the other way.
What was that? Well, that's one of the possibilities. That's one of the possibilities. So first of all, before we go on, let's just understand that when you... Already, I've explained, Avia walked in here and she said, I never understood Chadash. Okay? At least, I'll now tell you, if you see a bakery in Chicago that says on it, Yoshon, right? That's how you usually spell it, right? Yashan. Y-O-S-H-O-N, whatever it is, right? Or you see on a package, Mikemach Yashan. You ever wonder why they're bragging about the fact that they used old flour?
Yeah.
Ooh, we used old flour. This is why. Okay? What they're telling you is, if there's a Hechsher, if there's a Hashgacha that says that this product is yashan, or is made mikemach yashan, which is just different ways of saying the same thing. What they're telling you is that they're guaranteeing you that it's all yashan. In other words, that none of the grains that you're about to eat were planted and took root after the most recent Pesach. So, for example, the day after Pesach, almost nothing is chadash. There's no problem. Right? But Chadash becomes a problem in the fall, in the winter, and in the early spring.
Why is it
a strict
distance? What? Like, I don't have to, like, keep
Yashan. Okay, 1 second. I know, I just told you why they keep Yashan, because the Shulchan Aruch says you have to. The question is how, though, we'll get to it. Okay? So what have I told you so far? I've shown you the Pasuk. I've shown you the Mishnah. I've shown you it's a machloket tanaim, whether it applies in chutz laretz. I've shown you that I didn't go through all the shitos of the Rishonim, but the bottom line psak of the Shulchan Aruch is it applies in Eretz Yisrael and in chutz laretz, in all generations, and that the determining factor is when the grain took root. Okay, so that means that from the minute the grain took root until you eat it, there has to be a Pesach in between. That's the bottom line. So again, winter crops are usually not a problem, because by the time they were harvested and hit the market, they took root in the fall, but you were only going to eat them after Pesach. That's fine. But summer crops that are planted possibly after Pesach, right? And that's why in a year where Pesach is later, at least in America, a lot of the planting happens at the end of March, early April. The farmers do it based on the seasons, based on the climate. But our calendar shifts things. So if Pesach is a little bit later, then it's less of a problem because some of the stuff might have been planted before. If Pesach is earlier like this year, then a lot of the stuff is going to be planted after Pesach. Farmer Bob is going to plant on the same day he did last year. But for us, last year, April 15th was whatever date in Iyar, and this year, whatever date in Nisan, this year it's in Iyar, whatever the story is. So this is a real problem. Yes?
I just thought it doesn't rain, so it doesn't make sense for planting. But didn't they have like an irrigation system that they got?
They did have irrigation systems, but not for grains. They could. You can irrigate what's called a stay shlachin. You can irrigate like small vegetable patches.
So before they came up with this that we're about to learn, so there has to be one, they just didn't.
I'm not sure what you mean. In Eretz Yisrael, there's no need for it.
No, because in Eretz Yisrael, you wait till you just bring the carbon. They didn't.
No, not even you just bring the carbon. Even if there is no carbon, but
today, but.
But the stuff that by the time you harvest it, in most cases, it's Yashan anyway. And if you manage to harvest something that's Chadash, you're going to harvest it a week or two or three before Pesach, you'll wait a few weeks to use it. No, it is harvested in the summer, but it's planted in the fall. You plant in the fall, so harvesting in the summer is no problem. You can't plant grains in the summer. They won't grow.
Even now.
Listen, I don't know if it's possible to irrigate now, but also the climate is too hot. You don't grow grains in the summer here.
It's really expensive.
Yeah, they don't do it.
So just store it for like a year.
We don't grow much grain in Israel now anyway. We import it. It's cheaper.
Store for a year.
Yeah, you can store grains for a year, sure. Not even a year. You'd store it for half a year.
No, you
don't have to treat it. As long as it's kept dry, you can store it for years. Remember Yosef? Right? 7 years he stored it, right? And that was in ancient Egypt. Okay. So what's the heter? What are we going to do?
Stock up on the day after Pesach.
Yeah, but you could try that. By the way, people, not the day after Pesach, but people that are makbid on Chadash are stocking up now. With stuff that they can, you know, buying them boxes of cereal and things like that.
But it's still not in the market right now.
Or whatever. Okay. We'll talk, if you want to be mocked, but how to figure it out. But yes, it's around this time of year. Maybe some of it's already too late already. September, October, depends on the product. Different grains and, you know, the production cycles. But, you know, at the end of the summer, early fall, you have to start stocking up on things if you want to do that. But what about in times when we couldn't stock up? And even now, you can't necessarily. So what do we do? So the Ramah himself. Okay, right there in the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah himself. Umikom makom kol stam tvua shari la'achar ha-pesach mikoach sveik sveika. You know what a sveik sveika means?
Yeah.
It's a double vowel. In other words, there's two separate sveikot. If A is true, then this is mutter. And even if A is not true, maybe B is true. And if either one of those things are true, it's good enough. So Ramah says, Stam tvua. If I have I see a bag of flour, a loaf of bread, a cookie, a pretzel, something made from flour, and I have no idea where the flour came from and when it was grown, whatever. Stam tvua, shari is mutter la'achar Pesach, mikoach sveik sveika. Safek hi mishana she'avra. Maybe the wheat that this was baked from was grown from last year's wheat, so it's yashan. Ve'im tim tzalomer mishana zo. And even if you want to say, no, it's this year's wheat, mikol makom, dilma nishra shakodim ha'omer. Maybe this year they planted earlier and it took root. And therefore, sveik sveika, you can rely on that. Now this sveik sveika is very difficult. Rabbi Kiba Eger points out that that's not really too sveika. One something, maybe it's last year's wheat. And even if it's this year's wheat, maybe it was planted before Pesach.
No, but which way you read it, it depends, because you might not say.
No, it's not last year's crop. Maybe it's this year's crop. I mean, this year's crop was planted before Pesach.
If you don't know it, then it's not.
Basically, what you're saying is it's the same something. Maybe this wheat was planted before Pesach. Maybe it was planted a year before Pesach. Maybe it was planted a week before Pesach. Same suffix.
There is another suffix.
No, it's only one suffix.
Not from what he writes, but there is another suffix.
What's that?
It is how you understand that it's usher. If this is talking about.
No.
Or it's not.
No, that's a separate issue. The Shulchan Aruch paskind already. Shulchan Aruch paskind that we hold that Chadash and Chutz Laaretz is
also. So we can't use that as a suffix.
Raga. It's not a suffix. But we'll see that there are some, the Taz is going to base his heter on that. Okay? The Ramah said it's a sveik sveik. Some explained that the Ramah didn't really mean sveik sveik even though he said it that way. What he meant is that it's a suffix derabana. And this becomes important. If we hold like Rabbi Eliezer, that Chadash is also in a Torah in the whole world, so then Safek Chadash would be a Safek Daraisa. But if, and so for example, the Rambam, who says clearly that it's Daraisa, we'd have to hold that way. But maybe what the Rambam meant is that perhaps what we're dealing here, maybe we hold that it's Asur, but it's also Midrabanan. So it's midrabanan, and it's a safek, even one safek would be enough, even though he said sveik sveika, maybe that's what the Ramah meant. In any case, the Ramah himself, if you read further, and I won't go into it inside, because I'm running late, and I promise to be careful with times, finally, which I haven't been until now. The Ramah points out that it all depends on the situation. Like if you're in a country where most of the wheat, or all the wheat, was planted after Pesach, so you can't rely on a suffix. For example, the Aruch HaShulchan says in Russia there's no suffix. We know. They only plant after Pesach, certain types of grains at least. Okay, and today as well, I just read this morning on the OU's website, Chana Gorelick's father, Rabbi David Gorelick, works for the OU Kashrus, and this is one of his big areas. He has a whole article, and they know exactly, you know, that you can check the Department of Agriculture, and he says that 75% of the wheat in the United States is Yashan, so that's great, it's a majority, but it doesn't matter because they're different types of wheat, and they use the summer wheat for certain things. One's high gluten, one's low gluten, and, you know, pizza dough, they use one kind of flour, and I don't speak this language, but the point is, very often, there is no suffix, and we're going to have a real problem if that's what we want to rely on. So that's one possibility, the Ramah, that we rely on some kind of suffix, but there isn't always a suffix. There are three other potential leniencies that have been mentioned. The Taz, basically works on the basis of what Elisheva was saying. And he says, look, it's machloket tanaim. And it's not 100% clear which one we follow. And it's true that the Rishonim wound up following the opinion that it's Aser, but perhaps they did so only with Safek. Meaning, perhaps the issue was never really resolved. And in a Shatat Chak, in a case where we have no other choice, perhaps we can rely on the opinion that Chadash doesn't apply in Chutzlatz. The problem is that the Shulchan Aruch didn't say that. The Shulchan Aruch said very clearly that this is what we hold, and the Rishonim also, the Rambam and the Rif, which is what the Shulchan Aruch is based on, they didn't present it that way. They didn't even say there's two opinions. They just said it's Asur. The Aruch HaShulchan, it's actually the Bach, which is one of the early commentaries on the tour. And the Shulchan Aruch quotes this, the Aruch HaShulchan, sorry, quotes this as well, suggests that Chadash is only a problem if the land is owned by a Jew. The Gzeirah Midrabanan of Chadash, again, he's assuming that it's Midrabanan, and that Chadash only applies in land owned by a Jew. You don't tell me the Shulchan Aruch specifically said otherwise. Right, he'd have to go against the Shulchan Aruch. And he did go against the Shulchan Aruch. The Beis Yosef, the Bach is called Bayit Chadash, because he argued a lot with the Beit Yosef. They were contemporaries. Tosfot, but he's not the only one. Tosfot, the Rosh, the Rashba, the Ran, all are against this opinion. The Bach is a Dat Echid. But if you... He says that Chadash is Asur Midrabanan Chutzlaretz, but only to land owned by a Jew. So if that's the case, it would be a problem for a Jewish farmer, but most of the farmers in Chutzlaretz are Goyim. We buy the grains from the Goy. So if you held that the Isser of Chadash only applies in land owned by a Jew, you'd solve the problem also.
I thought that was the
Aruch HaShulchan quotes the Bach as a possibility. No, I'm giving you, so far I've given you three heterim. We saw inside the Ramah, who says we can rely on some kind of a suffix. The Taz says that we assume that B'shas Adchak, we can follow the opinion in the Mishnah, that there is no Chadash in Chutz La'aretz, even though the Shulchan Aruch didn't say that. The Bach says that maybe there is an Isser Chadash in Chutz La'aretz, but it's Midrabanan. And it's Midrabanan only in land owned by a Jew, not by a Goy, which is against many Rishonim and against the Shulchan Aruch. And the fourth possibility, the Aruch HaShulchan suggests, and this one is not directly contradicted by the Shulchan Aruch itself, and it's based on the opinion of a single Rishon, Rabbeinu Baruch. He says that maybe when they made the Isser of Chadash in Chutz La'aretz, they only meant in places in Chutz La'aretz that are close to Eretz Yisrael. Now, that might sound a little strange, but there is some basis for this. First of all, you may not realize this, but there actually is a chiyuv of Trumot U'Masrot in Chutz La'aretz. But only in countries that are in Syria, for example, is a chiyuv of Trumot U'Masrot. Right? The rabbis and in Egypt, places that are close to Eretz Yisrael. And I guess the reason they made the prohibition is that they were afraid that somebody will bring stuff across the border from Israel to Syria, let's say, and they won't realize, so they made it chayiv in Syria too. But they never said that in America there's a chiyuv of Trumot U'Masrot. So the Aruch HaShulchan says maybe when they spoke about Chadash in Chutz La'aretz, they were speaking only about countries that are close to Eretz Yisrael, and particularly when this wasn't just about impossible to keep in certain places. It's possible to keep it in Eretz Yisrael, it's possible to keep it in Babel. It's possible to keep it in the entire Middle East, but it's almost impossible to keep it in Europe. It's almost impossible to keep it in America, because and I don't even know what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere, meaning you have these dates that are based on the agricultural cycle in this part of the world. So maybe there never was an Isser. And so again, all that works only if, all those answers only work if you assume that the Isser in Chutzlaitz is Midrabanan, which, again, many of the Rishonim felt that the Isser is Daraisa in Chutzlaitz, and then this whole thing goes out the window. But those are the four potential heterim.
But the whole reason is that because of imports, imports can be gotten from any country.
Okay, but if they never made an Isser, they never made an Isser. So the bottom line is the following. Where does that leave us? There's an established heter, although frankly nobody really knows what the basis for it is. All these opinions, the starting point was, look, everybody's eating chadash, and they're doing it because it's almost impossible to avoid eating chadash. You'll either starve or it'll be very, very difficult. So we have to figure out how it's allowed, and then after the fact we come up with all these things. Misvara, from logic, there, some of them make some sense. In fact, it starts off with an opinion in the Mishnah that there's no Isser Chadash in the Chutzlaitz and Gemarinu. The problem is it's against the precedent. Almost all of the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch himself don't seem to hold this way.
How did they keep not all the Rishonim lived near Israel?
That's a good question. I don't know what the Ashkenazi Rishonim did. The Rambam lived in Egypt. Shulchan Aruch himself lived in Eretz Yisrael. It's an interesting question. I don't know, what they did in the time of the Tosa. I also don't know enough about the agricultural cycles in France and in Germany. I get the sense that it's in areas further north that it's more of a problem. Yeah. Poland and Russia, So, on the one hand, there is a well-established basis for Heter. I mean, the names I've just mentioned, the Taz, the Bach, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Ramah. It's not like you're dealing with, people of questionable authority here. We're dealing with the major achronim. No, everyone acknowledges that the minig is to be mekel, and they have to figure out why. So there are three or four different answers about why. But everybody says, listen, there were those who were machmir. The Vilna Gaon held it was usher. Period.
So he starved?
I don't know what he did, but he said... can't eat chadash.
Also, the Baruch, I forgot his name. Rabbi
Abin Baruch.
Did you just say that he's the one who said that Israel only meant to base his narrative to Israel?
Yes.
So are we going to use...
Okay, but the Aruch HaShul... You're right. That's exactly what I'm driving at. Mitzad Echad, there is a long-established tradition to be lenient on this point. Mitzad sheni, when you start going through the halachic sources, you realize that the leniencies are relying on minority opinions against all the Rishonim, against the Shulchan Aruch. And it's clear that this was done only out of a sense of a real emergency. That's what I meant at the outset when I said this is a very interesting example of how to deal, with this type of problem. Where does that leave you and me? I think the general psak in Chutz Laaretz still is to be mekel. All the major kashrut organizations in the United States, and as far as I know, in most other countries as well. In England, is everybody, the Kedassia, for example, they makbid on chadash? You don't know. You don't think so, right? I think generally, basically, all over the world, outside of Eretz Yisrael, I'll get to Israel in a second, outside of Israel, all over the world, the general practice, even among those who are very strict on other matters, is to be lenient. But there are those who are strict also. I found the following Rabbi Chaim Jachter, those of you who know him from Teaneck, I found an article he wrote, and I'll just read you a few sentences, because this gives you some actual information about specific rabbis. He writes, "This author heard Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik at a shiur at Yeshiva University relate that he follows a lenient approach to Chadash. I did not know that. Rav Moshe Snow, who happens to have been a teacher of mine, was a student of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he told this author that Rav Moshe Feinstein's yeshiva on the Lower East Side of Manhattan followed the lenient approach to Chadash, and Rav Moshe ate the yeshiva's food." So we now have evidence that Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Soloveitchik, and Rav Moshe Feinstein themselves were lenient. On the other hand, both Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein follow the strict approach to Chadash. Indeed, some claim that perhaps today we should be stricter in our observance of the halacha. They note that it is relatively easier for us living in North America to follow the stricter approach than it was for our ancestors. And that's also something that has to be asked. If once upon a time it was almost pikuach nefesh, right, if you're talking about the fact that you just couldn't eat, today, one can question whether that's true. Today it is difficult, but it is not impossible, and it is becoming easier and easier. Although, it could be that the reason it's possible still is because there's this relatively small number of people that are doing it. In America, there's a rabbi in Muncie named Rabbi Yosef Herman who made this his life mission, and he publishes these charts every year, and he'll tell you all kinds of products. You want to buy Cheerios, he'll tell you the production code on the dates. It comes out every year, and he does all this research, and they tell you on the box either the production date or they tell you the best sold by date, which is just based on a certain number of time lapses. So from those dates, you can tell when that actual box was packaged. And he has these all these calculations. He checks Department of Agriculture data, and he talks to companies, and he figures out that anything that was packaged prior to this date is okay. And different grains, it's different types of stuff, and he knows what's in each type of product. And it's not just is it wheat or is it oats. It's which type of wheat, and it's the whole thing. And this is what this guy does for a living. And the OU relies on his things, and the OU now also can provide this type of information, and those who want to be machmir, or makpid on this can do so. I definitely had a Rebbe who once told me once, if you want to pick a chumrah, this is a good one. On the one hand, because halachically, there's a very strong basis for the strict opinion, and the lenient position is kind of flimsy. On the other hand, it's still very, very difficult, and it could be that if we would all decide that we can only eat Chadash, that there wouldn't be enough. We'll only eat Yashan. It could be that it's possible only because it's certain people. I don't know. If in the United States, if the OU just decided we're not going to give any Hechsher anymore on Chadash, only on Yashan, I don't know whether the whole infrastructure of the food industry in the United States would be able to produce enough kosher wheat if we did that. I just don't know enough about it. I'm just out of time, so let me just say one more thing, and then we'll stop. Here in Israel, the general practice is to be strict about this. Again, stuff made in Israel, it's not a problem anyway, but even imported stuff, not only the Mahadran Hashgachot, but even the Rabbanut. The Rabbanut will not give a Hashgacha on Chadash. So if you see a product imported from Chutzlaretz, if you go into a supermarket and buy a box of Cheerios made in the United States or a box of cereals made in England, and they have a OU or a Badatz Manchester or whatever it is, those organizations will give a Hechsher on Chadash. But they won't allow it to be imported to Israel. They'll only import the Yashan ones.
So, in fact,
last year I remember there was a problem and it was a mistake, and the Rabbanut put out a bulletin that certain types of Cheerios are a problem, and they gave the lot numbers or whatever. By mistake, they were imported Chadash, but in principle, the Rabbanut is makpid not to have Chadash, which means if you buy products in Israel, even products imported from Chutz La'aretz, if they have a Hashgacha, then you're getting Yashan. But when your friend goes to America and brings back packets of Quaker oatmeal, even though you bought Quaker oatmeal in Supersol, the one you bought in Supersol was definitely Yashan. The one your friend brought back from America might be Chadash. And therefore, if you're makbid on Chadash, so you have to be careful about that.